Universal, the original Academia, if such it may be called, derived from the Academy of Plato in ancient Greece. It was a mystery school in which those who were of a superlatively developed spiritual constitution were enabled to further develop themselves and to fulfill their potentiality to be something beyond the baser state of a mundane or profane character. The academy was structured in such a way as to provide students with the basic curriculum that enabled them to develop their higher faculties. Thus, there existed a hierarchized curriculum with the basics of logic, mathematics, geometry, rhetoric, and natural sciences, a foundational platform for this developmental process, the initiation into the mysteries at a higher level. Hence, the students accepted had to first have a basis in the rudiments of reason before they could transcend reason through gnosis and attain actual knowledge in a metaphysical sense through ritual and spiritual practice. Many would criticize the Platonic school as basing itself on a fundamental error, and indeed the same would claim that such an error nullifies any claims made to have the truth, or that there is such a thing as truth itself, it being merely an abstraction and all subordinate truths that are related to it as propositions within a grand schematic argument are simply conceptual constructs and human-invented useful fictions and necessary lies. They would claim that such a mobile army of metonymy, metaphor, et al. Is simply a discourse or language employed as a system of regulating, controlling, and managing the population. However, this is to give the schoolman and the purported philosopher kings perhaps too much credit, ascribing to them the very truth which is affirmed to be non-existent, and in the case of Foucault to attempt to reduce the higher states of consciousness and higher planes of being to the purely human, all too human level of consciousness, to the world of mechanism and quantity. Both are wrong in their criticism, including Plato, who was wrong in his affirmation of universal truth accessible via mathematics and via number in the Pythagorean sense. Abstract formalism and quantitative reductionism are no path to paradise. Paradise or immortality is attainable only through spiritual practices that create a transcendent personality, the absolute personality. This is the Vama Marg or left-hand path of subjecting oneself to challenges which, in overcoming them, serve as springboards to the divine. The contemplative passivity of the lunar spirituality and even of the infrahuman Dionysian path are simply forms of spiritual atrophy and the gradual erosion and weakening of the soul through a failure to strengthen it, and this in opposition to challenges both internally and externally conditioned. The Aryan in path of the solar Uranian spirituality is the only path to the stars. Plato affirmed the existence of the Demiurgus as his highest height, the creator of the earthly, mundane plane of being, from the fifth heaven downward. This was his god or his absolute or pseudo-absolute, and his academy was structured on the basis of his god's will, his violent transmission of his conscious mind into the lower planes, leading to a crystallization of the higher vibrational states of being, those which exist in the realm of forms, and which are manifested upon the earth plane as a perishable matter which the mundane identifies with as his be-all and end-all. Ashes to ashes and dust to dust. Plato hence, under the influence of the demiurge, fell victim of his error and confused the eternal realm of forms with the mundane perishable and corruptible matter of the world, going so far as to say there existed in the eternal realm blueprints for such things as tables and chairs, these being objects of a purely human artifice through his conception applied to some extent to organic life in terms of the principles of their being. Hence the confusion of Plato, initiated through the figure represented by his mentor Socrates. The Socratic tradition, which was critiqued fairly well in the works of Nietzsche, who himself had only a partial truth owing to his affiliation with Jewry and Masonry and possibly financed by Jewish bankers, such that he was spoken of by Miguel Serrano as a half-Jew and properly. The Socratic or Platonic tradition was the initial form of what has come to be known as universalism, the one-size-fits-all template of worldly life and organization by self-appointed philosopher kings and their pseudo-gnosis embodied in Judaized Freemasonry. The universal error of Plato possibly derived via Socrates from the Cloaca Gentium of the Middle East, and this itself from the ruins of Vedic India, which had been transformed under the regression and mixing of castes into a Cloaca Gentium, and as a necessary result of the amalgamation of consciousness a distorted pseudo-gnosis which transmitted itself from east to west and crystallized around the mysteries of Chaldea and its surrounding region where Socrates had presumably dwelt at a certain point in his life. Hence the plague virus of a pseudo-gnosis was carried back by the vector of Socrates's mind, and through his ambitious and powerful student Plato further amplified its scope through the ancient world as the Greco-Roman tradition. Though elements of truth remained in the affirmed truth of the Demiurgus and perhaps beyond in the doctrine of Plato and later Neoplatonists such as Plotinus, the distortion was apparent and had its deleterious consequences in enabling the influx of yet more sewage into the cloaca gentium of the Greek and Roman empires. Such figures as Alexander the Great, Titus and Nero attempted to put a cease and desist order through conquest and force on the backwash of pseudo-spiritual currents into their relatively orderly power centers and relatively stable cultures, but it was too late. The universal had assimilated into itself particularity of organic life, distorting and perverting its structural essence through its hegemony. One might conjecture that the hegemonic discourse of the universal is a transmission of the mind of the demiurge through his agents, his biological offspring who he had created and who are controlled and stage-managed by their bioengineers, the reptilian transdimensionals. Hence the abstraction of the quintessence is a necessary operation of jury, which is an essential tendency of their hive mind consciousness, ruled as it is through the hierarchy of the Sephirotic tree of death, with the prince of darkness the demiurge ruling over all and controlling and regulating their conduct and indeed structuring and influencing their consciousness to a minute degree. The violation of the forms Plato speaks of via quantitative language was the demiurgic transmission of his aggressive and violent will upon the mundane plane. Number, especially, the ultimate reductio ad absurdam, is a formalistic language which attempts to impose its reductio of everything to nothing upon all and sundry organic beings. Hence, as Heidegger critiqued in his Being and Time, the beings of being are violated through a misunderstanding of the real meaning of being through the history of being, a narrative or story of universalists, they who are adherents to the mind and will of the demiurge, his children properly so called, they who are called Jews today and who are hybridized stock of reptilian transdimensionals and Neanderthals, further and subsequently mixed together into an amalgam of organic life forms, a plagiaristic organic lie that has no ontological validity in higher planes. The consciousness of jury is one based upon this formalism of the false universal, of the demiurge, and could only be called demiurgic consciousness, a logical, quantitatively based mode of thought centered in the left hemisphere of the prefrontal cortex, the center commonly associated with language. This hyper-rationalism has its astrological correspondence with the planet Saturn, who has, according to Miguel Serrano in Manu, for the man to come been transformed into a captive aeon, a machine from which gravitational fields are generated for keeping the souls of the denizens of Gaia in a state of degeneration and corruption, reducing their lifespans and subjecting them to temporality. Saturn is associated with limitation, restriction and matter, with its symbol showing the cross of matter over the circle of the soul and connoting the reaper's scythe, the death drive or todestrieb represented in Freudian psychoanalysis, the Jewish application of the demiurgic consciousness to the philosophy or discourse pertaining to the soul, the Saturnization or demiurgization of the soul, immersing it in matter, in the anal phase and other modalities of the subpersonal or infrahuman states of consciousness. Thus the Jew characterizes and caricatures the mundane, attempting to apply his universal template to all and sundry, the goyim, all non-Jews, they who are evaluated as profane, a profanation of the mysteries of the demiurge, what the Judeo-Christians call God. Hence the hegemonic discourse of the demiurge was transmitted virally through his offspring, who served the meiotic function of an abortion of the crowned and conquering child of the mysteries of polar hyperborea, which were syncretized and mixed together into an amalgam of pseudonosis of black magic occultism, a counter-initiation in the sense of René Guénon. The syncretism became twofold, a pseudo-universalism for the Gentiles in both our esoteric form, the mysteries of the universal in which all and sundry might participate regardless of any organic, actual particular qualities, racial cultural distinctions and the consciousness inextricably bound up therewith, the outer and inner being simply two sides of the same coin, never universal save when subject to the violence of the universalists, and an exoteric form of profane religiosity usually in the form of demiurge worship, the one, being, God, YHVH, Jehovah, and if need be a Trinitarian conception of his son Jesus, but typically confined to a veneration of the one should jury have attained this point in their dialectical praxis of theocratic expansionism, thereby confining the consciousness of the masses to a limited state of submissive slavery before the GAOTU with themselves as his special and selected children. Thereby jury makes claim to have a monopoly on the universal, to thereby justify their rule over others as the priestly caste children of God God, and to install their Zion government using this theological discourse to legitimate their hegemony. It is not the discourse of theology alone which they draw upon to manipulate the mass mind, but rather their theological discourse is a de facto translation of their existence on the earth, and it is indeed a plagiaristic distortion of their history, having been derived from and formulated in large part in Babylon, wherein they intended a takeover coup, subsequently pretending they had existed in captivity. The book The Great Jewish Mask by an anonymous South African author reveals this distortion and syncretism that became the Tanakh at a later period. The universal so-called thus has manifested itself from the plane of the demiurge to the mundane plane and has come in the form of theocracy, a system of control and organization by a priest caste who lords over and exploits the laity or mundane caste of believers, so that the pseudonosis of the Abrahamics, the priests of Abraham, Saturn, Satan, can be monopolized by themselves to suit their own personal ends of global dominion and indeed the ends of their invisible helpers, the entities in their hierarchy of evil who overarch their limited function within the matrix of the demiurge, within the spatio-temporal dimension of purely mundane existence, the material and the lower astral planes wherein these entities dwell. This monopoly of the universal was the keystone in the construction of the Temple of Solomon on the part of Jewry, whose priestly caste discourse and its associated black magic practices and relation to entities have enabled them to obtain a control on the mass mind, and indeed to construct the mass mind as a universal, and this through the egregores and concepts of universalism, the standard form template they have constructed out of pre-existent forms and imposed upon the mass through deception. The promise of false gifts and force. Judeo-Christianity rose up through the conditions long prepared in advance by Jewry through their infiltration into the Greco-Roman world and indeed the preceding Middle East, wherein they consolidated their power. If was ripe, was Rome, for the imposition of yet another universalist template made in the image of the demiurge and developed through a further syncretism of earlier syncretisms. Christianity in its advent was simply a combination of the elements of Rome, which had their origin as syncretic remnants of earlier forms of the tradition. These elements were a mixture of Hellenistic rising and dying sun god archetypes with the pantheon of Greco-Roman metaphysical representatives of planetary archons and the Jewish supremacist theology superimposed upon and interwoven in its fabric. It was only possible to install this Novum Romanum religion after Jewry had established sufficient power and, once attained, they were able to employ their dialectical praxis amongst the rabble of Rome to sabotage the nation and reduce all to the point of exhaustion, justifying a reaction to their chaos, imposing their own brand of order in the form of the universal and institutionalized formation of demiurgic power, the power of God. Thus came into being through the parthenogenesis of dialectical legerdemain the reign of the fictional Jewish man-god formulated in the image of the prior sun-gods, only those which were a translation of the consciousness of the hybrid stock of the Mediterranean and Middle Eastern region, not that of the Hyperborean Apollo. The crucifixion was a symbol of the mutability and transient nature of the rising and dying sun-god archetype, which is discussed in Ocharyu's book The Christ Conspiracy. This foreign archetype was imposed upon the mass mind of the Roman Empire, which, in order to perpetuate itself, necessitated the assimilation of all and sundry organic particular culture into the melting pot of the universal. The Aryan deity Apollo was reduced to a state of transience, no longer solar in the sense of the polar Hyperborean tradition, but rather a poor copy of that archetype. This was reduced further by a Christianity, mixed and deformed into a Jewish man, a hollow mockery of the mysteries of Apollo, a positing of matter over spirit. This is the satanization of spirituality, with spirit being smeared with the mud of matter and the masses hurled into the mud of the cloaca gentium in more ways than one. The violent transmission of this universal spread itself according to its inner principle of aggressive expansion over the earth, Over the ensuing centuries, the Universal carried forward in its expansion, destroying all organic cultures and peoples and assimilating those usable elements into itself with a smile of hypocrisy on its face and destroying all others as heresy or infidels. The profanation of the mysteries further devolved as the Kali Yuga spiraled down from the pagan empire of the Pax Romanum to the black magic transmutation of the partially Aryan Imperium Romanum to the Semitized Imperium of Jewish, Judeo-Christian Universalism. Radiating outwards with greater numbers and force driven by the fanatical zeal of the Demiurge and his offspring, the Catholic Church spread its conquering power through the subtlety of priestcraft and through the viral egregores of the Demiurge themselves, encoded in theological emotional pathos, that of the Near Easterner with his lunar and devious mind. The spirit of the Prince of Darkness spread his false light over the globe through the implicit coercion of priestcraft, backed up with the machines of war of the empires the Judeo-Christians had formulated, expanding the power and influence of the agents of what they call God over the earth. During this dark age of the Piscean era, the last epoch before the end of the Kali Yuga and indeed, the end of the cycle of the Manvantara according to Vedic cosmology, the university system was established. This system of academic, a satanized distortion of Plato's Academy, was designed to corroborate and legitimize the dogma of Catholicism and served as a training institute for its priests, who were further indoctrinated in what Duns Scots porridge of abstract conceptual jugglery. Thus scholasticism was born, the ideology or discourse of the schoolman. Julius Evola, in his article Scholasticism and the Spirit of Modernity, has critiqued the scholasticism of the medieval ages, though his article does not refute its value. Its value lies in an approach to, but by no means an attainment of, a higher understanding of the absolute supreme being, that than which nothing greater can exist, according to the scholastic St. Anselm of Canterbury in his ontological proof of the existence of God, which amounts to a typical example of scholasticism and thus a pale reflection of the same Platonic error, to define terms, themselves conceptual constructs, an attempt to endow them with meaning by associating them according to this system of logical reasoning or discourse with yet other terms conceptual constructs, in other words inventing a hegemonic discourse and attempting to legitimate it through itself homologously, without it having any correspondence to reality other than being a mere conceptual construct crudely and formalistically superimposed upon reality, just as the Demiurge superimposed his egregoric ejaculate upon the Mother Goddess in his violent Rapine of Isis. Scholasticism was the discourse of the universal during the medieval ages and established itself, through itself homologously and autonomously, i.e., as a self-made law unto itself, purporting to be self-legitimating, just as the Demiurge has established himself through a violent imposition of his being on the higher planes, his ejaculate crystallizing on the starry tresses of Isis. Scholasticism being the discourse which had monopolized the false universal, it established what was called the trivium and the quadrivium. The trivium was a basic set of three disciplines that constituted a lower level of academia, of the university curriculum. It consisted of the disciplines of grammar, logic and rhetoric, and was largely based upon the prior Roman system of education, itself derived from the Platonic Academy and Aristotle's Lyceum, which took up the torch of Plato. The medieval distortion of the Greco-Roman pagan curriculum was a further satanization of the teachings of the mystery schools, wherein the learning consisted of a purely materialistic, worldly, secular form of learning, though denying its own secularism through being a substantiation of Catholic theology. Grammar was simply a study of the languages, purely written and formalistic, which I crystallized during the Hellenistic period. Gone were the days of the runes and of the magical symbols, which were pregnant with the meaning of star lore and higher, legitimate metaphysics and ontology. The magical symbols and sigils had been declared, under the influence of the Catholicity of the false universal, as heresy and marks of old scratch, demonic marks of Satan and his demons. The functional utility of runes and sacred symbols of a higher gnosis were thus subject to a profanation, a dragging down to the lowest level of this truth, a mere pragmatic application of human, all too human, conceptual constructs integrated into a formalistic system of abstraction with no organic basis. Hence the parole or natural discourse or speech of the folk, the organic particular group of actual vital essence, the culture organism as Yockey would call it, was substituted as an act of black magic for a formalized language which purported to apply to all, universally. Latin and ancient languages of the Near Eastern as well as Greek became superimposed upon the consciousness of the leadership of the folk, the priest caste who, having been rendered a carrier of this virus of the false universal, became transmuted into a universal man, a citizen of the world in the terms of Socrates, and thus their conscious mind was severed from their folk. That the priest caste were so alienated from their people, they of whom they were derived biologically through ancestry, led to their being formed as a caste apart, having no organic relationship to their folk. Unlike the priest caste of the people which pre-existed the universalist religious formations, this Catholic priest caste had no regard for organic being, the Dasein spoken of by the National Socialist Martin Heidegger. The priests of the universal were apathetic as regards organic, racial, folkish being and cast aside as mere nature or pantheistic naturalism, pagan. The Catholic priests condemned to death all of that which was other to their god, aloft that which was incapable of assimilation into the maw of their vampire deity. Within the trivium or lowest tier of the scholasticist universalism, logic served its function as a foundational structure of the system. This logic, derived in part from Aristotle and via him from India, where he had undoubtedly travelled with Alexander the Great as the latter's tutor, was that of the spatio-temporal matrix of the demiurge, and explains why Aristotle adopted his hylomorphic conception of reality, as this conception was that of the divine mind of the Logos. 8. The Logos is logic, the manifestation of the divine mind and divine will in empirical five-sense reality, the logic which governed the fifth heaven downward, the logic of space and time, of immanence, and which denied anything transcendent beyond itself. The logic adopted by the medievals, though purporting to explain reality, was simply a modernist construct of the Kali Yuga, a purely materialistic and lower astral conception of reality, a blind glance of the blind god the demiurge at the reality of his plagiarism of the pre-given world of eternity that preceded his violation. Hence the scholastics of the medieval ages, the priests of the false universal attaching themselves to him, restricted their consciousness of higher planes to the world of his manifestation, his plagiarism, and mediating through themselves his mind in the form of the discipline of academic called logic. The Aristotelian demiurgic logic of the Logos purported to describe the laws of thought and the structure of reality, and, as a universalist discourse, imposed itself upon all and sundry, restricting their consciousness to a state of mundane limitation. Though this logic purported to be a stairway to heaven, it was in fact an iron gate barring access thereto, confining the masses into the prison matrix of the demiurge through the restriction of their consciousness to that of worldliness, with the superimposition of a theocratic system of human and Saturnian logocentric ideas which confined themselves in its prison. The Scots porridge of dense logic put forth by such as Duns Scotus, a Scottish monk who, through taking the logic of Aristotle and his theocratic imitator Thomas Aquinas to the extreme, was the Scotsman's attempt to transcend the matrix of the demiurge through the logocentric discourse of the demiurge using the logos against himself. For this, Scotus narrowly escaped being branded a heretic and burnt at the stake. His sophisticated reasoning was unintelligible to the theocrats of Rome, and hence he managed to escape that fate. However, he opened up fissures in the matrix wall of the demiurge, enabling more light from the black sun to enter in and to liberate more souls from its net. The last subject of the trivium after that of grammar and of logic was that of rhetoric. Rhetoric was a significant element in the mode of control of the Greco-Roman Hellenistic and earlier periods, and presumably derived from India after the latter had fallen and assimilated into itself the blood of the Lemurian beast man and his cunning deviousness. Rhetoric thus was always, in Platonic jargon, sophistry, a reasoning discourse that employed all manner of emotional elements and deceptions designed to achieve a pragmatic purpose of influencing other parties. It was in its origin the original book of How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. Plato took issue with this, and this for motives one might infer were of a pragmatic nature unto themselves, perhaps to impose the will of the demiurge logos upon all in the name of truth. He differentiated his truth from that of rhetoric or sophistry in his Gorgias, a dialogue which featured the sophist Gorgias, a foreigner from that of one such as Plato's philosopher archetype, the mongrel Socrates. Gorgias was considered more or less false and wrong in his usage of dialectic to achieve purely pragmatic aims without regard for truth, the logic of the demiurge. Gorgias was castigated by Plato through his mouthpiece or sock puppet Socrates as being an enemy of truth, and Plato had the dialogue between Gorgias and Socrates reduced to a victory for Socrates based upon his homologous discourse, his self-legitimating, pseudo-axiomatic language whereby the truth of his claims was affirmed in advance of any proof, and this based upon the way in which terms were defined and a chain of reasoning consisting of weak links constituting the argument to establish his truth. Every connection between claims and propositions was based upon an interpretation of terms, and these extended to terms he claimed were related according to the logic of the Socratic dialectic. That the terms were always defined in a specious way based upon interpretation and were cobbled together through false association between propositions make of them fallacious arguments from analogy, necessarily fallacious as being an attempt to assimilate distinct things on the basis of an asserted similarity of features, these similarities being little more than subjective perceptions. The fallacy of secundum quid, no connection obtaining between the things claimed similar or their attributes, a fallacy of relevance. Plato put words into the mouth of Gorgias that the real Gorgias would never have agreed to. Plato thereby imposed his universal upon Gorgias as a vulgar display of the power of his logos, a vulgar rap and of a blow-up doll straw man of Gorgias, with Gorgias in absentia and unable to represent himself in the debate. Thereby Plato demonstrated his own fallacy as a paragon of truth, as his truth simply couldn't stand up to criticism as it was restricted to his own academic circle jerkers who hid away in the ivory towers of the academy, concealing themselves from the reality of the world, living in what Aristophanes lampooned him for in his satirical play mocking Plato for living in the clouds. Plato's veneration of Socrates suggested a myopia of judgment on his part. Socrates was a Jew-like, devious snake who utilized the logocentrism of the demiurge to impose his universal truth upon all, serving the mongrelization agenda with his universalist hegemonic discourse. The passive-aggressive nature of Socrates was characteristically Jewish and indeed Judeo-Christian in a later representation of the same thing, and with justice the Athenians dispatched Socrates with hemlock Mother Nature through her agents of an organic state, hierarchical, racial, dispatching an agent of the demiurge in the latter's attempt to destabilize the structure of Athena with his structural weapons of the demiurge, his homologous logic, the self-legitimating and self-asserted logic of truth, I am that I am, A is A. Rhetoric carried itself forward in the trivium of the medieval ages. The schoolmen cloistered in their privileged world of ecclesiastical bigotry, existed at a complete remove from the population and served as a cadre of aliens existing amidst the folk whose purpose was to regulate and impose the will of the demiurge upon the population. While they communed with and received commands from the demiurge, they hoarded the wealth of their slaves as the vampires they were. Some were sincere and lived an austere life of relative purity in terms of the circumstances and conditions of their lives. However, their mind was polluted with the rhetoric of the demiurge, the theological discourse of the Bible in its then alien tongues of Latin, Greek, and Hebrew. Rhetoric thus served as a tool of priestcraft to deceive and mind control the population. The usage of the universal language in the church during their black masses before the demiurge served not only to tap into the entities which were the conferrers of occult power upon the priest, but to bamboozle the laity into a cowardly submission before a spectacle they didn't understand and indeed misunderstood entirely, attempting to praise and worship according to their instructions these entities and their dark lord, and to avoid any punishment on the part of the fanatical priest caste and their Jewish masters, all of whom constituted a spy network forever seeking any black sheep amidst the flock they could burn at the stake in sacrifice before their God, serving up another soul to the Lord. Rhetoric thus was an essential tool in the mind control of the population, who are controlled and regulated by the priest caste through the emotional techniques they employ, the style of speech and the sensationalistic subject matter related to demons, devils, angels, salvation and damnation. The rhetoric of the priest, derived from the ancient world and the priestcraft of that time, continues to this day in the soft tones of reason and their pompous tones of authority, the secular and religious clergy of the Judeo-Masonic and Judeo-Christian Slave Plantation Society, the Society of the Demiurge. Rhetoric and grammar are interwoven, and the rhetoric of grammar had modify the language of the spoken word of the folk, being a universalistic modification, a violation, of the organic culture of the race of the people, of their culture soul upon whom it was imposed in the name of the universal. 11. The grammar of rhetoric, its inverse, the original rules of writings of the folk, was mangled through this universalist imposition, and thus the organic was subject to a distortion of the inorganic, just as the higher planes were subject to a concealment by the demiurge. For the medieval schoolmen, grammar and rhetoric were theologized, and theology was the grammar and rhetoric of the knowledge power discourse of modernity at that time, and everything within the Kali Yuga of the last 5,400 years qualifies as modernist or modern. Contrary to the Sidivantists, the traditional Catholics, for Catholicism is simply a formulation of the universal within the Kali Yuga, a syncretic mixture of irreconcilable differences and a perversion of the tradition, enabling Jewish supremacism and the mongrelization of the white race. The theology of today's world is still the theology of the demiurge, and this hegemonic discourse of knowledge-power relations is still the discourse of the contemporary period, the nadir of the Kali Yuga. Whether the theological discourse dresses itself up in the garb of a rainbow flag or in that of a black monk's gown, this theology of the universal is nonetheless artificial and a violent imposition of his will over all, reinforced through the legalistic and theocratic jargon and discourse of the black magician priest caste and their underlings of useful idiots and fellow corrupt hypocrites at lower levels. In contemporary times, many attempts, especially on the part of Jewry, to engineer a universal language have been made, Esperanto being one example. More covertly, the philosophers and theorists of contemporary academia have attempted to weave theoretical webs in which to trap the minds of their flock of would-be priests in training and molding them to become universalists, assuming they were not born that way, which is usually the case, being a segregated caste of privileged elites, to perpetuate the system of the universal. Such figures as those of the Vienna School of Logical Positivists and of Edmund Husserl, the Jewish creator of phenomenology, have attempted to posit theoretical hegemonic discourses claiming that the structure of human consciousness is the same, and this based upon their conceptual models and schemata. This is an application of Platonic paralogic, the logic of Plato, of the universal, that the term human is itself a universalist abstraction, to claim that all humans are X, Y, Z, etc. is a presupposition, a homologous and hence factually incorrect logic. Hence no structure of human consciousness can ever be discovered, only invented as an abstracting, and violently imposed upon others, defacing or ignoring their difference. This discourse of the universal has only one property that may be said to be true in the sense of corresponding to factual reality either in the world or the realms above, that it imposes violence upon being and destroys through its function that which he can influence. The notion of a common or universal is an articulation of violence imposed upon others, perverting and distorting their being with its one-size-fits-all rhetoric, grammar and logic. Jacques Derrida, a Zionist Jewish supremacist philosopher of contemporary society, has even gone so far as to boastfully claim the supremacy of Jewry in affirming that the very words spoken by the human, all too human, take the form of the Hebrew letter Aleph when given articulation. The falsehood and arrogance of this claim underscores the real meaning of humanity in the discourse of modernity, that being to imply that only Jews qualify as human, or that they are the template or archetype of the human and all else are mere simulacra or copies of the children of God, when the reality is the exact opposite, Jews being merely plagiaristic constructs of aliens and being an alien consciousness imposed upon all, universally, made in the image of their violent war god who imposes himself upon the other for domination and vampirization. The higher level curriculum of university during the medieval period was called the quadrivium. This was comprised of arithmetic, geometry, music and astronomy. The universal pervaded these disciplines, which were yet more abstractions of the quintessence as applied to certain forms of mundane life, bringing the mind and will of the demiurge into the hearts and minds of the mundane and profane masses. Arithmetic, which derived from the Arabic peninsula, was the foundational underpinning of the curriculum of the demiurge. It was and is based upon quantitative reductionism, reducing everything to abstract equality such that the determination of the beings of being was purely quantitative, reduced to number, and simultaneously number was projected upon all things as the net of quantitative formalization, stripping them of their idiosyncratic properties, of their actual, essential properties, and reducing them to a purely quantitative level. This is yet another example of the progression of the Kali Yuga, which is in hierarchical terms a regression to the lowest common denominator. Politically, taking the numerical idea to its logical conclusion, following its own logic, reduces everything to a communitarian or communistic state of the ant heap, or worse, as even ants have a hierarchy. The demiurge's results are measurable, and they are intelligible only for the psychopaths and hypocrites who control society as the black magician Hidden Hand. Everything under the reign of quantity, as René Guénon referred to the dark age of the Kali Yuga, is reduced to quantity and subject to temporalization, to generation and degeneration. All processes and functions are subordinated to numeration, a reducing and calculus of means and ends, always translated into the mode of priestcraft power which derives from the Near East and the rootless internationalist merchants of jury, number, accountancy, calculation, exchange. Ultimately, all beings which have developed themselves through themselves and grown organically is subject to processes which degrade and reduce its life force to the unit, the basis of number, and thus ultimately in the form of money, the abstract representation of bioenergy, of life that can be sold and bought through the medium of exchange of the stock market, and indeed through the system of priestcraft which purports to have a monopoly through its universalist discourse of theology on the universal, on what it calls God. All that which comes from God returns to God, and this was the priest caste of vampires who absorb the bioenergy of others into themselves as the managers and administrators of God's kingdom, aka the kingdom of the demiurge, the ultimate vampire of the cosmos. Hence, to participate, which one must of necessity in the system of corruption, one must give in order to take. The system is designed in such a way that the net gain is exceeded by the loss for the profane, and the reverse for those enlightened with the false light. Thus one is determined per quanto as a citizen, and in being considered such is subject to the imposed duties which entail having to give of one's bioenergy through work in order to perpetuate the absurd cycle of his life, and this for the vain hour he exists on this earth. Arabic numerals are the basis of arithmetic and have their origin in the mind of the Semite who controls and regulates affairs through this pseudonosis, the knowledge of demiurgic quantity. His power is that of a trap which he lays out, a gold-plated trap which entices his would-be buyers, and, once they fall for this gleam of gold, this apparent value, they become trapped in the system of quantity as a node in the system of exchange. Whether financially, as in the actual system of mercantilism, or end out of the temple, the Semite entraps his payers, his sources of temporal power, and seeks the absorption of their life force into himself through indirect means, according to the rules and logic of his system. 14. Hence his power is of a lunar character, indirect, deceptive, mutable, fluid and transient, and this all bathed in the false light of a mirror of truth. His power is simulacral, a reflection of reality, of real power and force translated into the abstract formalism of language and accountancy, all reducible to quantity, be it in the form of the quantity of quality or formal quantity, for example mathematics and arithmetic specifically. That and algebra, another permutation of his formalistic legerdemain, reveals his form of power, that of the demiurge, a plagiarist, an imitator of the truth. Whether in the form of tithing, or in that of taxation or investment, or any form of giving in order to take, the goyim must pay in order to play the game, and according to his rules, those which are inapplicable only to them and not to himself or his tribe. Double entry accounting is a double standard counting, with two for the Jew and none for the goy in the end. His system works on the basis of illusion, the illusion of worldly allure provocative of desire, and the simulacrum of priestly caste powers and connections to higher forces which are held out as beneficial but are instead detrimental. Geometry is yet another discipline within the quadrivium that purports to grant privileged access to the universal, to God, to the demiurge. The great architect of the universe is held out as the model to follow, the modeler of reality according to Judeo-Christian and Abrahamic religion. The goal of this priestcast here in adducing geometry as an essential skill mirrors that of Plato's Academy and purports to be a skill enabling they who are skilled in this activity to have a monopoly on truth, on knowing the universal, and thus legitimating their power over others who have no knowledge of this alleged truth. Thereby the priest caste employs its limited materialistic and formalistic system of concepts and the language in which it manifests called geometry to regulate, control and justify their exploitation of others. The etymology of geometry is earth measure and implies a relationship of control and power imposed upon Gaia and indeed upon all material structures in the realm of the demiurgic plagiary, the world of the crystallized ejaculate of the demiurge. Measuring implies a controlling and relationship of dominance over the earth through a formalization of tangible reality again ultimately reducible to quantity to bioenergy for the vampire priests. The quadrivium also entailed the quantitative and materialistic distortion of astrology called astronomy. This is the application of geometry to the stars, supplanting a traditional grasp of star law with a crude abstraction of the quintessence, an extension of the demiurge into the realm of traditional gnosis, concealed under his material excreta. Rough implements such as compasses and squares and telescopes were used by the servants of the demiurge to reduce the higher to the state of the lower, to a mere human level of perception, the iron visual perception tangled up with and translated into formalistic language. The atrophy of higher perception, of the suprarational consciousness through an excessive preponderance of rationalism led to star law, the gnosis of astrology, becoming reduced to simple observation of material forms perceptible to the naked eye of the observer and their movements around the earth. At this time the Dark Age of Ignorance posited the existence of the flat earth and drove the peasants into an even greater state of ignorance. Intuition was thus neglected for reason, for the geometer's modality of consciousness at least among the profane. Presumably, star law was still utilized and practiced by the black magician elite of Judeo-Christianity and served their purposes of amusing themselves while they drove the masses into war and revolution to absorb their energies for themselves. Astronomy also purported to give a monopoly on the universal for the priest caste cornering the market on the actual gnosis of star law and its essential wisdom in understanding reality and how to conduct one's life, giving a monopoly to the black magicians of Zion who alone had legitimacy all else seeking to or actually practicing astrology being branded witches or heretics and subjected to the appropriate penalty of torture and murder. The ignorant peasants were whipped into a frenzy to witch hunt whoever the priests and their Jewish overlords would point their finger at and incite the mob to round up for torture and execution, setting a precedent to shroud the peasant's sight from the light of truth. That the truth of astrology enabled the population to understand truth, to predict and explain events and indeed to commune with the old gods with whom contact had been severed by the cabal through their false religion, was not something desired by the priests led to its being portrayed as heresy and this with religious justification, a religion contrived and designed to keep the population severed from the power of the gods and thus reduced to ignorant rabble easily controlled and manipulated by the priest caste. Music was the remaining discipline of the quadrivium. It was the application of the geometry of the demiurge to sound, rendering the polyharmonic structure of the higher planes a limited and formalistic system of rigidity. Within this context, the folk music of that time alone had managed to maintain and to serve as a vehicle of transcendence beyond the matrix of the Judeo-Christian god while the priest caste had their own brand of music which served to substantiate with sonic resonance the matrix system, to strengthen its walls with their acoustic assault of ecclesiastical music, the binding and restricting of the muses within the Saturnian bands of lead placed upon them by the formal schemata of the church, controlled and regulated by itself and itself alone. Through this process such figures as Bach and Buxtehude who were ostensibly and on the surface Christians managed to preserve in hermetic coding, in the hermetic symbolic tonality the tradition of the Hyperboreans. Though constrained to the breaking point by the Saturnian priests and their masters Jury and their reptilian overlords, The music of eternity still echoed throughout the realm of the Demiurge. Music was thus revitalized and transmuted under the genius of the Aryan race, under the guidance of the Divines manifesting themselves in the form of child prodigies such as Bach and Mozart helping to generate sonic beams of light to tear holes in the matrix of Dark Age gloom. Through the quadrivium, music became satanized. The folk music, which was an organic expression of the soul of the people, became assimilated to the degree Saturnian priests were able to achieve their purposes in the church, transforming the philosophical gold of the harmony of the spheres into the bass lead of a Judaized formalism. Choral and ecclesiastical music, which served the exclusive purpose of praising him, the Demiurge, and his Jewish man-god son with characteristically Semitic pathos. This leaden casket into which music was cast, rendered music was only broken through the will of Aryan man deployed against the assault on their conscious mind by the horde of the evil tide. This attack enabled Aryan man to develop a more transcendent state of being beyond that of a crude emotionalism, the weeping, wailing and gnashing of teeth of the Jewish archetype. The true universal of the Mother Goddess thus could be heard echoing in eternity through such German compositions as The Nine Muses by J.C.F. Fischer and Hexachordum Apollonis by Johann Pachelbel. Apollo thus resurrected and his noble form cast a shadow over the plaintive Semite on the cross, whose a vulgar display of female power was eclipsed by the solar spirit of Aryan man. The hermetic adepts of the Aryan Masons had made fissures in the matrix wall through such means as art and music, whose immediate influence upon the conscious mind of the perceiver was sufficient to rouse both the ire of the Saturnian priests of Catholicity and the blood memory of the Aryan folk. Masonry was the Luciferian opposition to the false universal of Catholicity and its demiurge worship, the god of Jewry. This is why it was perceived as a threat by the latter and infiltrated and co-opted by Jewry, as was their typical modus operandi of neutralizing their enemies, attaching themselves to their opponents as a leech and gradually draining the blood of their animate tools. The guileful cunning of Jewry transformed Masonry into an instrument of their ferment of decay, of their intended triumph of the underman at the expense of the Aryan Übermensch, whose light they sought to snuff out in their plans for Zion. The rhetoric and meeting of Masonry was subject to a universalization of the false universal by Jewry, who subordinated the rites and mysteries to their own level of consciousness, rendering the solar Uranian mode of consciousness of the Aryan into that of the chthonic Tellurian, submerging or attempting the submergence of the Sun of Mind beneath the horizon of the Superman, plunging it into the night of the Near Eastern and Mediterranean rites of Dionysus and Baal, the abominable rites of ghouls and vampires, and all of this in the name of God, the Demiurge, architect of an order of corruption. Both Catholic, Protestant and Masonic claims to having the true universal imposed upon the leadership of society a mental virus which infected their minds and led them toward the promised land of Zion with the Jew whispering instructions in their ears. Those who opposed the internationalist agenda were hunted and attacked from the shadows by Jewry and their affiliates, who had become shackled through Semitic rites of initiation to their GOTU and his evil horde, and accordingly had no longer any independent consciousness. Nevertheless, through the fragmentation of the power of the Catholic Church, opportunities opened up through which yet more light could be shed upon the earth through the leaden walls of Dark Age ignorance. The universal truth had become subject to question, to debate, and through this process was reduced to a mere conception, philosophy, universal truth or idea, and indeed as greater fissures were created in the wall and more light came through, this was construed as a symptom of insanity and a sign of narrow-mindedness. Thereby the priest caste were no longer venerated as the height of heights, as they alone who could possess the universal and employ their power against others through its justification. They were simply human, all too human, fallible, and no longer possessed the aureole of sanctity that had in prior epoch of Dark Age simplicity been a symbol of their pedigree as men of the cloth or men of God, saints whose power was derived through lunar means, that is to say indirectly from the false universal, the false light of the Demiurge, who they had arrogantly and with false humility and self-righteousness placed upon a pedestal as their false idol, their private preserve. The golden calf of Jehovah YHWH was thrown down into the mire by the seekers of truth, whose motivations were undoubtedly of a pure nature. Such figures as Prince Peter Kropotkin and Friedrich Nietzsche, though bound up with Jewry to a degree and of necessity, were motivated by a higher idea, that of justice and freedom as a means of establishing a society or state which could serve the people to elevate themselves above the level of the vulgar goyim, toward a return to Hyperborea. It was nonetheless Jewry, with its money power, its vampiric power, which still remained attached with leech-like tenacity to the Aryan Ubermensch. The folkish orientation of Kropotkin, of even to some extent Oswald Spengler and indeed of Stalin had to wait with infinite patience and go along with the powers of international finance in order to realize their longer-term objectives, like a desperate hero riding a tiger and clinging on while the tiger exhausted itself in its frenzied race to its own perdition. Hyperborea, the light of the black sun, bathed them in its rays as they involved themselves in the secret war with the black magician agents of the Demiurge. The true universal was forever inside of the adepts and perhaps to a dim degree of consciousness of Jewry, who was and is unable to secure his place in eternity. The Aryan's goal of spiritualizing the earth, breaking the walls of Jewry's technocracy, funded by promissory notes printed in the blood of his victim, was and is still attainable. The light of the true universal can never be extinguished, only the light of they who cannot secure for themselves a place in its realm. To maintain the refulgence of one's own soul, he must live in Valhalla even on this earth, and that means to live in the truth and to be in the world yet not of the world, to face the challenges of this world with a heroic stand and without existing on the level of the false universal, the state of being of the human, all too human, that of the worldly and other black magician masters whose existence also is incapable of immortality, simply a circling around in the wheel of incarnation, in and out of the digestive system of the Demiurge. They need to maintain this prison planet in order to perpetuate their vampire lives. It is up to the Aryan who alone embodies the true universal, the Graal or divine electron, to put a stop to this meaningless world of consumption and production, generation and degeneration. Should he fail, the world will carry on for a time and then become a decayed husk of its current vitality, the locusts of the population feeding and breeding beyond sustainability and thus bringing about their doom. From thence the Demiurge will continue with his hordes of reptilian trans-dimensionals and devastate other planets, transforming vital worlds into desertified dead planets racked with war and pollution, the only rotten fruits of the false universal and his violent expansion, the tumorous growth of the destroyer of worlds.